fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Africa's five World Cup-bound football teams, Egypt, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, and Tunisia, were all in action Tuesday in friendly international matches as they continued preparations for Russia 2018. Morocco and Tunisia both won their games. Egypt and Nigeria lost theirs, and Senegal played to a scoreless draw. The results in Casablanca: host Morocco defeated Uzbekistan 2-0. Ayoub El Kabi and Manuel Da Costa had the goals for the Atlas Lions of Morocco. Our Voice of America football fans will remember the 24-year-old El Kabi was the leading scorer at the 2018 African Nations Championship Tournament for locally based players. Host Morocco lifted the trophy on February 4th, and El Kabi had a tournament leading 9 goals. This was his first goal in a full international for Morocco. And I'm thinking the team's French head coach, Hervé Renard, will probably include El Kabi on his World Cup roster. In Nice, France, Tunisia defeated Costa Rica 1-0 on a first half goal by Wahbi Khazri. In London, Serbia beat Nigeria 2-0. Fulham man Alexander Mitrovic had 2 second-half goals for the Serbs. In Zurich, Switzerland, Greece edged Egypt 1-0 on a 29th-minute header from Nikos Kyrgios. Egypt's Argentine head coach Hector Cooper decided to rest Liverpool star Mohamed Salah, the 2017 African Footballer of the Year. Salah sat on the bench during the friendly international in Zurich. And in Le Havre, France, Senegal and Bosnia-Herzegovina played to a goalless draw. Now, these were the final friendly matches before teams going to the World Cup have to submit a 30-man preliminary squad to FIFA, World Football's governing body, in mid-May. The 32 teams will then have until the first week of June to trim their teams to 23 players, which must include 3 goalkeepers. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Yes, Tuesday was a very busy day for friendly international football matches. In Berlin, Brazil beat Germany 1-0, ending the reigning World Cup champions' 22-match unbeaten run. Gabriel Jesus' first half header proved decisive. It also restored some lost pride for the Brazilians, who were humiliated by the Germans 7-1 in the semifinals of the 2014 World Cup. And speaking of football humiliation, 2010 World Cup champion Spain spanked visiting Argentina 6-1 in Madrid. Like Liverpool star Mohamed Salah, Barcelona star Lionel Messi rested for Argentina. Messi watched the match from the stands. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports shout-out for Francisco Isco Alarcón, who led the Spanish attack with 3 goals. At Wembley Stadium in London, England and Italy drew 1-1. In St. Petersburg, France defeated 2018 World Cup host Russia 3-1, getting 2 goals from Paris Saint-Germain man Kylian Mbappe. Finally, here in the United States, in a matchup of teams not going to the World Cup in Russia, the U.S. men's national soccer team beat Paraguay 1-0 in Cary, North Carolina, on a penalty kick by Bobby Wood. And let's give another Sunny Side of Sports shout-out for Timothy Weah, the 18-year-old son of Liberian president and 1995 FIFA Player of the Year George Weah entered the match in the 86th minute. It was Tim's debut for the USA senior national team. He also made his debut for Paris Saint-Germain on March 3rd. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Some cricket news now. The Australian ball tampering scandal continues to make headlines. With more details, here's my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Ooten. Hi, Gwen.
Hi, Sonny. Yes, the fallout continues for Cricket Australia in South Africa. Captain Steve Smith, vice-captain David Warner, and teammate Cameron Bancroft have all been suspended and told to leave South Africa. Cricket Australia CEO James Sutherland spoke to the media on Wednesday following sanctions imposed on the trio for their role in the ball tampering scandal.
We have offered sanctions to the three players that I advised last night that were reported under Cricket Australia's code of conduct, and today, as you know, they are travelling home to Australia, and it is with deep regret that we're in this position. It gives us no joy, but the process that the Cricket Australia board has worked through over the last few days has been exhaustive to arrive as best we can at decisions that are sanctions that are representative of an appropriate measure given the incidents that took place in Cape Town on Saturday.
According to reports, Cameron Bancroft faces a 9-month ban from all international and domestic cricket games. Steve Smith and David Warner are both banned for a year. Warner was found to be responsible for hatching the plan and instructing Bancroft on how to carry it out. Therefore, Warner will not be considered for any team leadership position in the future. Team captain Steve Smith's ban is based on him knowing about the plan, yet failing to take steps to prevent it. All three players will be required to undertake 100 hours of voluntary service in community cricket. Reports also confirm sticky tape was used as sandpaper to scuff up the ball in an attempt to gain advantage against South Africa. On-field cameras caught Bancroft hiding the yellow tape in his trousers. James Sutherland said the incident has hurt the sport in Australia and around the world.
Clearly, this has caused a huge amount of damage to the game of cricket as a whole and certainly Australian cricket, and it's compromised the fans' confidence and faith in cricket, and it's really our responsibility, players, administrators, coaches and others, to reinstore that faith and confidence. There are millions and millions of Australians that love the game of cricket, and our job is to continue to inspire young people to love the game.
Sutherland said no other Cricket Australia players or support staff, including coach Darren Lehman, had prior knowledge of the plot. The scandal comes in the midst of the team's 4-test series in South Africa, with Australia currently down 1-2. The next test starts on Friday in Johannesburg. Back on U.S. soil, let's go to Florida, where in just over an hour, U.S. Open winner Sloane Stephens reached her first semifinals at the Miami Open tennis tournament, beating Germany's former number one, Angie Kerber, 6-1, 6-2. The win puts Sloane in the top 10 of the WTA rankings. And after the match, she spoke about what it means to hold that number 10 slot.
Getting into the top 10 is pretty special, and I'm super excited about that, and something I've worked hard for a long time, so I couldn't really be any happier.
Sloane has seemed to put a cork in the stream of losses she suffered since her U.S. Open victory, and she said patience has helped get her game back on track.
Winning the U.S. Open was an amazing experience and everything that came after that. And I think now, after Australia, I knew what I had to do to get myself back in shape and back ready to be playing. And I just stayed patient with myself. And like I said before, last week, I didn't play badly. This week, I wasn't playing badly, just kind of had to work with what I was given. And I think I've done pretty well with that the last couple of months.
Sloan plays her semifinal match on Thursday, where she will face three-time champion Victoria Azarenka of Belarus. Venus Williams is also vying for a spot in the semifinals after beating Johanna Konta of Australia in the quarterfinals, 5-7, 6-1, 6-2. Next, Venus will face Danielle Collins, also of the United States, on Wednesday night. And that's it for now, Sonny. Back to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Gwen gave us an update on the women's tennis action at the Miami Open. The tournament director is former American professional tennis player James Blake, who took a break from his duties to chat with reporter Craig Gabriel. Here's Craig.
James Blake, thanks for joining us on Voice of America. In this new role as tournament director, when you were originally approached, what was your initial reaction?
Well, my initial reaction was curiosity. I wasn't initially sure why they wanted me, and then realizing how many players are stepping into these roles, or ex-players, and how much they can make a difference to have the voice of a player there. And the more I thought about it, the more it made a lot of sense. The more my family was on board when they decided they were going to come with me to Miami for this time. So it became something that was more and more exciting to me, and then it got exponentially more exciting when I heard about the move, when I heard we were going to be moving to Hard Rock Stadium and partnering with Stephen Ross, and he was behind this this move and saw this this facility as the new site for the Miami Open. I couldn't have been more excited then.
You've been in the role for 6-8 months now. You've already got through a couple of weeks of the tournament. What surprised you the most about the position?
The hours, the amount of hours that have been put in, and just how much goes into making a first-class tournament like we have in the Miami Open. And I can't say enough about the team that does that, because I know I'm the one out in front doing the interviews and talking to people about it, but the people behind me, the staff, it's impossible to do it without a great staff. And I didn't realize that, I think, when I was a player. I thought of the people at the top of the totem pole, sort of the tournament directors, the tournament referees or the ATP staff, and I didn't think about how many other people go into it year round that make a tournament go. And now I'm very appreciative of those people, and I would love to have a few of the players kind of walk a mile in my shoes and see what goes into it and how many people are working really hard to make their experiences better.
It's an eye-opener, isn't it, when you leave your actual playing career? I remember Jim Courier saying to me that when he got into the media side of things, he said, I wish I'd known how hard the media actually work.
Absolutely. And it's something that it's good and bad, because when you're in the sort of the bubble that you put yourself in to be a tennis player, you have to be focused on just one singular aspect of your life to be as good as you can be at that. But it would be nice at times to just take a little departure and see that there is a greater world out there. There are a lot of other people that are making your experiences better, or that are going into to your life, to your career. It's not just two players going out and playing a match. There's a lot of production that goes into it. There's a lot of procedural things. There's a lot of operation staff that make a big difference in how smoothly that that match goes.
Well, you've outdone your contemporaries. Roddick hasn't been a tournament director. Fish hasn't been a tournament director. Have you gone nah, nah to them?
Yeah, no, I haven't, because I don't know if they want this job. You know, it's a lot of work, but it is actually really rewarding, and I've enjoyed it a lot. So those are two guys that actually have so much tennis knowledge, and they're great people to work with, and have a lot of respect from the current players. So I'm sure if they ever get the opportunity, they'd be excellent at the job. And you know, I think they've got plenty of other things going on. We've all now got kids, we've all got families, and it's so different from when we started on tour, but our lives are all still connected, and it's still a lot of fun.
Just finally, James, you touched on the fact that other players finishing their playing careers are moving into this sort of a role. Mm-hmm. Tommy Haas, mm-hmm. you, Feliciano Lopez, mm-hmm. Richard Krajicek from mm-hmm. the past, all that. It It's giving back to the sport, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when they're done playing a sport they've played their whole lives, they're a little lost. They don't know what to do. And I took some time away. I was fortunate enough to, when I retired, I had one kid and another on the way. So that filled my days pretty full already. But then I thought about what I wanted to do. And if I wanted to stay in tennis, if I wanted to get out of tennis and go into finance or anything else. And it made me realize how much tennis had given me, how lucky I was. And how much I wanted to give back, and then started in commentary, and then had this opportunity, and this has really been a fun experience for me to be a part of this, and hopefully I'll continue to grow this tournament and continue working with the amazing staff I've been able to work with, and it is a lot of fun, and it's great to be still a part of a sport that's given me so much.
James Blake, thanks very much.
Pleasure. Thanks.
That's James Blake, the tournament director of the Miami Open Tennis Tournament. And James was talking with reporter Craig Gabriel in Miami, Florida.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
It's time for my Wednesday basketball chat with Mwamoyo Hoops Hamza, the chief of the Voice of America Swahili service. Sporty greetings, Mwamoyo.
Sporty greetings, Sonny.
I know we usually begin in the professional ranks, the NBA, but let's bring it down a notch, Mwamoyo, to the collegiate ranks. The field is now set for both the men's and women's Final Four in the National Collegiate Athletic Association Division I Basketball Championship Tournament. Let's begin with the men, Mwamoyo, and I'll get your thoughts. In the first semifinal on Saturday, surprise package Loyola Chicago will meet Michigan. Break it down for us. How about Loyola Chicago? What are their strengths and weaknesses?
The Ramblers. These are the Cinderella team of this tournament. They have been playing upsets throughout the tournament. The most dangerous thing about their offense is they don't take bad shots. Combine that with the fact that at all times they have above average passers on the floor and at least four above average shooters on the floor. And that means their passing lanes are always open and the spacing is great.
They really move that ball well,
they move the ball very well. Weakness, inexperience. They're in the big leagues now and they just may have come to the end of the road.
Okay, how about those Wolverines of Michigan?
Michigan, very clever team. They put your defense in such a miserable situation as your normal pick and roll coverage. They are not good enough to cover them. Their main weakness is they get stagnant at times and they go minutes without a basket. That's the main weakness.
The Loyola Chicago Michigan game will be played in San Antonio, Texas. And that will be followed by the second semifinal, also in San Antonio, between Villanova and Kansas. What about Villanova?
These are all number one teams. They are ranked up there, so they are expected to be where they are right now. Villanova, they are almost like an international team with the skill level and the speed in which they cut, and every player on the floor can both shoot and post up. On offense, you need to get out ahead of them in transition. They don't have many weaknesses. And that's why I think they're going to win the whole thing.
Okay, you're picking the Wildcats.
That's my pick. Okay. Kansas. No wonder they're ranked number one also. They actually play four guards and one big man and look like a mid-major team. They don't look like a college team. They share the ball well, shoot it, run good stuff compared to most major teams. They shoot the three-point so well. Their main weakness is when their threes don't fall, they fall.
Okay. Well.
So Villanova is my pick.
I want to give one quick shout out for that African big man for Kansas, Udoka Azubuike. He was born in Lagos. And I think a lot of our Nigerian listeners, Mwamoyo, starting to follow this big man. Very muscular, and he can jump.
He can jump. He can run. And he's been playing very well. He's been very, very important for Kansas. And he's NBA material. I mean, given what he does for the next season, he'll probably go into the NBA very soon.
I don't want to give short thrift to the ladies, Marmoyo. So tell us about the final four in the women's basketball tournament.
The ladies, this is the battle of number ones. They're all ranked number one teams. Louisville against Mississippi State, Notre Dame against UConn. And I'll tell you this, UConn, they scare me.
they've scared a few teams over the years, haven't they?
They're so good, and they are most likely to win this championship.
Okay, let's move up to the professional ranks and the NBA, Marmoyo. And on Tuesday night, Miami Heat and Dwayne Wade, they kind of gained some revenge on LeBron James and the Cavaliers. They beat the Cavaliers 98-79. Your thoughts on that game?
Well, I mean, it shows where Cleveland is, and it's surprising how Miami is doing so well in this season. The latter part of the season, Miami have been playing well, winning games, and now they're well into the playoff run. Cleveland, they're still struggling. I mean, this is 7-6 games before the playoffs, and they're still struggling. So we don't know what's going to happen.
One team that is not struggling right now, Marmoyo, the explosive Houston Rockets. They crushed the Chicago Bulls last night in Texas, 118-86, and they did it without the beard, James Harden.
James Harden. They keep on winning, and now they are 6.5, I think, games ahead of Golden State Warriors. So it looks like with six games remaining, it looks like they have locked on the number one position in the Western Conference and in the league. So that means they will have the home court advantage throughout the playoffs.
I think the last time they won the NBA title, they had that big Nigerian Akeem the Dream Olajuwon.
Keep it simple.
they have to be considered title favorites this year.
Oh, yes, they are. I mean, if they can come out of the Western Conference, chances are they're going to win the championship. And they have a very good chance of coming out of the Western Conference.
The Golden State Warriors right now trying to get healthy, Marmoyo. Their star guard, Steph Curry, is out, I think, for the first round of the NBA playoffs.
Chances are he won't be there for the first round. And now we're looking at who are they going to play in the first round. They are looking at Utah Jazz or Minnesota, the number six and number seven and number eight. And because there are still games to play, so you don't know who is actually going to go up to number six and who is going to come down number six, number seven, or number eight. So if they play Utah, they're in, tight situation without Steph Curry. But KD, this is his time to show that he can carry this team. Because the team, Golden State Warriors, they've been carried by Steph Curry throughout the last few seasons. Now, KD will have the chance to show that he can carry this team out of the first round all by himself. Well, not by himself, by leading the team.
Another star guard, Kyrie Irving, also looks like he'll be out for the first round of the NBA playoffs. He's had a great season for the Boston Celtics, but kind of hobbling at the end because of knee issues. What impact will that have on the Celtics?
And that is a bad situation for Celtics because if you look at the way the playoffs roster is looking at now, if they are to play Bucks, that means they have to contend with Giannis. And that is a very tall order to deal with without Kyrie Irving.
One quick shout out for my beloved Washington Wizards. They won right here in Washington last night.
And they beat my beloved San Antonio Spurs.
116-106. Your thoughts on that game?
Pretty good game. Washington Wizards, they showed up. They played very well. And they beat a good team. But, San Antonio lost Aldridge. He left the game with a possible knee injury. Now, that could spell trouble for San Antonio. If he doesn't come back for the last six games of the regular season, San Antonio are in a very bad situation that they could even miss the playoffs, which is very rare.
Marmoyo Hoops Hamza, the chief of the VOA Swahili service. Thank you, Marmoyo.
Sure, you're welcome.
And that wraps up the March 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sule Terawali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, is in the midst of one of the largest and most serious humanitarian crises in the world. About 4.5 million people have been displaced by violence, and 13.1 million need humanitarian assistance. America sees the humanitarian crisis in the DRC as an urgent priority for several reasons, said USAID Administrator Mark Green. First, the United States has provided millions of dollars to the DRC to alleviate suffering and foster economic development. But they are being robbed of their full value by crisis, conflict, and poor governance, said Administrator Green. Man-made disaster in the form of inhumane authoritarian governance is destroying any chance that these purposes will be met. Second, this is an international crisis. Brutal policies, sweeping corruption, poor governance, and simmering conflict have displaced millions. Hundreds of thousands have fled into neighboring countries, imposing new burdens and risking regional instability. Third, the scope of suffering is breathtaking. And while it's true that the situation in the DRC is complex, that is no excuse to not act. We may not have all the answers, but we do know what isn't working, the status quo, said Mark Green. Therefore, we suggest taking the following steps. First, the DRC must hold credible elections this calendar year. Second, the government must foster conditions that make true democracy possible, including immediately making clear to citizens that they are free to express their will and choose their own future. Third, the government must guarantee the safety of humanitarian workers. Last year, 158 security incidents targeting humanitarian workers were reported. Two UN experts were abducted and killed. And finally, because an international crisis requires an international response, we call on other countries to step forward and do more to help. This demand begins with the government itself. It has done so little to alleviate suffering, even as many of its leaders have apparently been lining their own pockets, said Administrator Green. True compassion requires more than providing money. It requires us to use our collective influence to demand concrete actions that will end cycles of misery. We call for these demands because they will offer the people of DRC their first real hope of a brighter future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a discussion on the challenges of political transitions in Africa. Controversy recently swelled in Kenya after opposition candidate Raila Odinga rejected Uhuru Kenyatta's election win. Sierra Leone holds a runoff vote for president on March 27th, after the two leading candidates failed to secure a 55% majority. Egyptians are headed to the polls next week with only two candidates in the race, and incumbent President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi appears to be the clear-cut favorite. The challenges of political transitions in Africa on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 1730 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.